D1, number 24A.
So, on the basis of the fundamentals of a Christian Science treatment, as Mr. Dolley has showed it to us, let's see the individual stages that such a treatment takes. And these stages are those which John Dolley pointed out over and over, especially in his book on the Christian Science practice. So on the level of Christian Science, the method of treatment which he gives runs through about 7 stages. The first stage is that we take the problem, whatever it is, whatever its name, and put it right behind us. Because the problem itself is a liar, the patient is a liar, because if he wouldn't, he would be true and therefore whole. And so our human consciousness is a liar too. So let's put the patient, the practitioner, the case all behind us and see that that is all mortal mind. The Christian Scientist takes best care of his body when he leaves it most out of his thought. So we get that peace and rest right from the beginning when we put mortal mind, mortal mind's argument right behind us. By forgetting the whole thing, by putting everything out of the way, and then we can do the right thing, namely the second step, to turn to the divine mind. We go out from the Infinite One, go out from mind and spirit and soul and principle and life, truth and love. Then our consciousness is focused on the purity of reality, where there is nothing going on but really mind and mind's ideas, spirit and spirit's ideas, soul and soul's ideas, and so on. And this is the reality of all things. So, to be absent from the body and be present with the Lord, to be absent from mortal mind and be present with truth and love, that's our second step which we can take. And so we can lose ourselves within the immanence of mind and mind's ideas. There we can see the reality of all things, of all ideas. And so our consciousness in that treatment rests on the synonymous terms and its ideas. Because looking out from the synonymous terms, we can only see the image and likeness of these synonymous terms. And that's the true nature of man. Because God knows himself infinitely, therefore in that standpoint lies the answer really to everything. So as thought dwells in that realm, we can see how we need to know the ideas of the synonymous terms, or else we only have a faint, indefinite sense of the real. But if we see what mind and mind's ideas are, we can see man and the whole situation as the ideas of mind, as ideas of power, of action, of law, of guidance, of inspiration. We can see man as the idea of spirit, substantial, spiritual substantially, as the reality which is spiritual, which bears the fruit of spirit, as that which unfolds forever, progresses forever, has infinite unfoldment, as that which is the idea of soul. Therefore man, as the blessed child of God, rejoicing, free, boundless in satisfaction, boundless in gratitude. And so as the idea of principle, we see man as the ever-operative idea, ever-operative and frictionless system, governing harmoniously. It's the idea of spiritual power with authority, with authenticity, imperative, apodictical. It's the idea of life, where we see reality and man always exalted above the mortal, always in a state of eternal individuality, untouched by mortal idiosyncrasies, always in that state of the newness of life, the spontaneity of life, without any connection with the past. As the idea of truth, and we see reality and man as that which has dominion, which is a state of consciousness, of Christ consciousness, with perfect form, perfect health, perfect stature, the stature of the fullness of Christ. Or we see it as the idea of love, fulfilled in every detail, included, not excluded, encircled by the protection of love, kept in the warmth and adaptation of love, beautiful for situation, the joy of the whole earth. So we can, whatever comes into our mind in the way of ideas, what we do in that treatment is just look from mind to idea, from spirit to idea. And in that way, we establish the true reality about the universe, including man. When we do that and rest in that, then a third stage usually unfolds. Namely, because the nature of being is soul, and therefore definite, and names itself and identifies itself, therefore that consciousness is identifying itself as a specific truth about the situation. Something within us crystallizes. Something within us focuses on a definite line, on a definite idea. People then usually ask, but how is that done? It isn't done. It happens. That's the nature of being of the third day, that the waters are gathered together and it happens that the dry land appears. We don't have to make the dry land. So in the measure as within ourselves there is that reflection of ideas, and we just think about ideas, no more about the patient, no more about the situation, no more how the situation looks like and so on. And the waters are pacified within ourselves, and we just see in that second stage that all there is God and his ideas, and we know what these ideas are. Then the third stage unfolds by gathering definite answer. A definite concept comes on us. Something becomes definite within us. Something speaks within us. Something becomes certain within us. We have a conviction within us. Something is just crystallizing itself within us. See, that third stage where something tells us, spiritual sense tells us, what is the specific, definite answer to that situation. In that way, the divine mind reading has brought to light the true answer. And when that idea governing the situation has sprung up in spiritual sense and spiritual consciousness, then naturally we can go to the fourth step and handle the situation with this spiritual idea. The moment we touch a spiritual idea, we touch the power of the spiritual idea. We touch that the idea by itself is omnipotent, has all power to deal with error, is omniscient, therefore knows what to do, therefore leads consciousness how, and shows consciousness how to handle the situation, is omnipresent, because that idea is then not my idea or the patient's right idea, it's the omnipresent idea, and it's omniactive. It works. It works by itself. It operates by itself. It's that point, you see, where we can then see that the idea is doing the job, not we anymore. That the idea, because it's the idea of principle, is self-operative. And there it is where we can see the bigness of an idea, the power of an idea, the might of an idea, the intelligence of an idea, and how idea is that which works. One of the biggest thing is when one touches that certainty that we just can let an idea do its job. Well, we have a feeling that all we have to do is to step away so as not to interfere with that idea, not to interfere with our human concept, how it should work and when it should work and what it should bring forth. It's that wonderful stage of development within each one when he realizes that ideas have power, that all that matters are ideas, that if we give room to the idea that these ideas are really working out the maximum of good, and if we can see that, then thought can go to a fifth stage where we are lifted out of the erroneous situation. Then we can deal with the specific situation as nothing. Then we can deal with this specific error by knowing the fullness and amplitude of the right idea. Then it's there where again our understanding of ideas is necessary, because then we can see the idea in its fullness by letting this idea reflect itself with all other ideas. In the time past of the argumentation, we used to take in all the suggestions in order to concentrate on the case. Here, it is the concentration of all the ideas reflecting each other infinitely that is filling our consciousness. And as it is filling our consciousness as definite, specific answer, which is right above the situation, then we can know in the sixth stage that this is the truth in truth and in belief. That the right idea is omnipotent not only in the realm of truth, but also in the realm of belief, because then it heals. Then we have the wholeness made apparent, so that finally in the seventh stage we see that whenever we take this attitude and this way of treatment, that no treatment will ever be lost, that every treatment is a fulfilled treatment because it moves within the infinite circle of the one being, because it goes out from God and looks at God's creation from God's point of view. And that is always a fulfilled treatment. This is the method which John Dolly showed us over and over in on the plane of Christian Science. It's a wonderful method, and we can see that in this method we really let God and his idea do the job. There is no more guessing what is wrong. There is no more interfering with what God should do. There is no thought transference, thought power transference, influencing the other mentality with our mentality. It's just the one mind manifesting itself as idea. And ideas are ever operative with power in the realm of truth and in the realm of belief. And so are the answer to a situation. It's a great sense within ourselves to let it happen, to give room, so to say, to the operation of the divine idea. But then, as we advance, thought somehow pushes further to the plane of absolute Christian Science. And on that plane of absolute Christian Science, we begin to realize that Christian Science is not just a method of handling visible error and audible sin, that it isn't that healing method which we can apply if sometimes once in 10 years something goes wrong. I don't know, perhaps once in 20 years just goes wrong. But that Christian Science is a science of being, a science of life, is a science of a divine attitude, that it is a way of life, really. And in this way of life, we begin to realize that a completely new consciousness is necessary. Christian Science, with its healing of audible sin and visible error, is the application of the divine to the material, to the human. But in absolute Christian Science, it is the formation of a new consciousness that is necessary. It's beginning to realize that mortal consciousness has to be mutated out of itself into a higher consciousness. A consciousness which really is not dependent on what has gone on up to now, but is a consciousness of the newness of being, of the spontaneity of being. So when we come to absolute Christian Science, we are not so much interested to heal sickness than to heal a false consciousness, a false level of consciousness. Therefore, in absolute Christian Science, we are engaged in understanding the scientific relationship which exists between principle and idea. Whereas in Christian Science, we were interested in the relationship between idea and illusion. But we want to know being for the sake of being, and not for the sake of healing an error. So therefore, in absolute Christian Science, we really come to that treatment where every student is his constant practitioner, because a student has to watch his consciousness so that his consciousness is constantly healed of a mortal consciousness and takes on the form of a spiritual consciousness. The aim, therefore, is not to correct mistakes, but the aim here is to calculate rightly. It is, therefore, not a healing art, but it's the preventive art, which is absolute Christian Science. It is not waiting until an error has made itself manifest, but is dealing with latent error, with the possibility of calculating wrong, with the possibility that there is an unconscious consciousness, a subconscious consciousness, with the possibility that there can be mortality. And so absolute Christian Science just deals with the essence of mortality by affirming definitely, positively, consciously, constantly, the divine relationship between principle and idea, calculating rightly, and every right calculation is by itself a healing. Namely, it destroys the supposition that there could be a wrong calculation in consciousness. What is the method of treatment given here? We have looked at it last time when we went through those synonymous terms on the plane of absolute Christian Science. And I, for myself, for the last 2 or 3 years, have tried to make it a rule to watch consciousness closer and closer, so that only the fact of absolute Christian Science are conscious and awake in my consciousness. What does it mean? It means that absolutely seen, life, truth, and love are the constant practitioner. Namely, that in being there is that terrific sense happening, operating, that being itself says, I am constantly something new, life. And that which is new and which I constantly create, and that impulsion of the newness of life, is the fact about the present situation. And that fact about the present situation is of the nature of love. It is completely adapted to the situation. It is that which meets the need of the situation. And so inwardly I try as much as I can be still and just hear as much as I can that constant voice of life, truth, and love. That constant voice which says, don't care, old boy, just be quiet, just be still. I am the practitioner. I, life, truth, and love, am the practitioner. I know the newness of life. Don't care tuppence what happened before. The past is of no use, is of no factor. All that what has gone before, all that has gone on before in the way of good or evil, what has brought you to the point where you are now is of no avail whatever. The I says, I am every split second new. And I enforce this newness because I am truth. And the enforcing of that newness is the best that can happen to you because I am love. And if we can listen to that divine melody as close as we can, that we feel not what I'm thinking, right or wrong, is of any avail, not even my metaphysical work is of any avail. All what is of avail is that the I is saying, I am right now what I am, because I am life. And that which is, that's the positive, powerful fact of being. Nothing else matters. And that's the best that can happen to you, old boy. Don't care. Don't care what happens. Just go. It will be the adventure of love into a complete newness of consciousness, into a complete new structure of consciousness. It's that I which is the law of mutation, that I which is the new revelation of being. That's going on. Nothing else is going on. And that word says, I have a Christ. I have a Christ, namely, this ideal, which the word is constantly voicing silently to consciousness. That ideal individualizes itself infinitely, because it is life. It has its infinite individual expression. It's not just one mass, just one amorphous whole. It is infinitely individualized. Therefore, the spontaneity of life is individualizing itself within everything we do, and always adapted to the situation, because it's love. Therefore, it's always consummating at every individual point the best, the highest, which is possible. And so I get the feeling that the I, which is truth, is giving a treatment, is the treatment. It's the treatment, because that treatment says, I am the infinite power of truth which expresses itself individually as life to the fullest sense of love. I am the law of annihilation to everything unlike itself. I, truth, life, and love are the only demands on men. I, truth, life, and love is the only jurisdiction on men. I am doing it. And you, old boy, you just sit there and let it happen. Don't resist it. Don't resist it. Let it happen in you. And that brings me to the sense that I say, oh. Then, all the while, in every presence, there's just that one father, mother, caring for men. And I touch the true patient, Christianity, life and love. Where I begin to feel, all right, then I take it in, life, and I retain it, love. And taking in that treatment, I am the true patient, and retaining it, nurturing it, loving it, adoring it, I'm the true patient of love, then I don't have to demonstrate men. Then life, the father, love, the mother, are constantly demonstrating men. And so the more I lift consciousness away from demonstrating men, and the more I take in the ever flow of life coming to me and caring and retaining that sense with my motherhood sense, the more the idea man is being expressed. The more I know God, the more we are men.